Hi there, this is Brent.
And this is Amanda.
We are the Unreliable Narrators.
Here to talk about the strangeness, the mystery, and the wonder of Gene Wolfe's prose.
What is time?
What is memory?
What is a person?
Is this reality?
Where are we?
Do we exist?
Have you ever considered that all your choices were what brought you right here to this very moment?
Episode number 16. Filipina Baby.
Amanda? Filipina Baby? I haven't seen this in any Gene Wolfe bibliographies.
Well, that's the strange thing about it. It really isn't in any Gene Wolfe bibliographies. But someone went hunting and found a publication that had an otherwise uncredited Gene Wolfe story in it. Rooting around, like, I don't know, a pig at the base of an oak tree looking for, I don't know, truffles, maybe?
Truffle pigging?
Truffle pigging. Does anyone around here like to go truffle pigging?
Yeah.
We don't know what to say. It was published in the Laurel Review. I'm not sure what the date is on that. Maybe you know.
1969, volume one.
Okay. So, Filipina Baby.
Yeah. So, I guess I... Okay. So it says Gene Wolfe.
Yes, it does. Spelled just like our Gene Wolfe.
Yeah. So there are several other Gene Wolfes when you go in library catalogs, in used book catalogs. There is a Eugene Wolfe that did a homesteader's autobiography. It's rather expensive, but I was able to get sections of it scanned. I don't think that the writing style is anything.
Yeah, it seems totally unrelated.
Yeah, it's a rougher vernacular style for that autobiography,
right,
which would make sense because it was a homesteader who was a farmer and a rancher.
Yeah, Eugene.
Yeah. There is a Gene Wolfe that is credited, you'll see, on a lot of like the Disney picture books and
right, some kind of illustrator.
Yeah, so
yes.
He was an illustrator that adapted cartoons into
children's books.
Yeah, children's books, and there's some Tom and Jerry, Disney and Tom and Jerry, and then a few other things. And that's not our Gene Wolfe,
right?
And then,
so if you're looking for a complete Gene Wolfe collection, you don't have to hunt down those Disney children's books.
Yeah. There's another Gene Wolfe who was an advertiser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and he gets credited with certain things. Sometimes he'll show up in indexes, and it'll be indexed as Gene Wolfe, but when you actually look it up, it's either an article that's actually an advertisement that's pretending to be an article about
okay.
a product, or it'll be an actual advertisement on the page, and it's Gene Wolfe and Company or Gene Wolfe Advertising Company. And I doubt that Gene Wolfe was actually writing a lot of the stuff that I was reading on those pages, but the style seemed totally different.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have thought that Gene Wolfe would be that common of a name, but if you give enough span of time, you can probably come up with any combination.
Yeah.
Are there other Brent Towels floating around the world?
There is a guy that used to live in South Carolina, and he was, I think he was in the military. And occasionally I would get either letters in the mail or stuff that was supposed to go to him, or sometimes an email too.
So that's a little bit more chaotic than my situation, which is where for many years my sister-in-law and I had the same name until she got married and changed her last name. There were two of us, and we lived in the same town, and we had a lot of the same friends, a lot of overlap. And for a time, I was an adjunct professor at the same university where she was enrolled as a student. So she would often get emails intended for me.
Ah.
So good times.
So the publishing.
Yes.
So this would have been early Wolfe. If this was written by Gene Wolfe, it would have been around the time he was writing Trip Trap.
Right.
One thing reading Filipina Baby, I'm like, yeah, this feels like a fairly mature author.
Yes.
But then when you read Trip Trap, it feels like a very mature author that's writing that. So I don't think that we're not comparing this to, say, Operation Ares or, you know, some of the other stuff.
Right.
As far as it not being in any indexes, his Easter story with the priest, the reverend that doesn't recognize that he's talking with Satan. That one isn't listed. So Easter Sunday isn't listed in a lot of indexes. And if you go back and read the old Earth mailing list, there's some back and forth about it where he was asked about it and he's like, oh yeah, no, I didn't write that. And then later he's like, yeah, actually I kind of remember writing it now.
Okay. It seems pretty obvious that the author of hundreds of stories could have slipped their mind. And especially with an early work, that no one would have felt particularly motivated to hunt down sort of some of the rougher, earlier, less interesting pieces. Because I will say that this doesn't seem to be one of those stories that is going to haunt me with its complexities and ambiguities. There are certainly elements here that seem Wolfian, and it's an interesting story, but it's not one that I will have a hard time sleeping tonight because I can't quite figure out all of the things or because some particular image or connection is so powerful.
Yeah. So I think that's most of the framework for the, is there anything you want to add?
No, I think that, yeah, we're talking about a story. It's not certain that it's our Gene. We're being very possessive here. We're not certain that this is the Gene Wolfe, but it seems at least possible that it is. I don't know if I want to weight the probability, but I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah. I guess we can talk about that more towards the end. I guess I'll just give the
recap. Summary. Yeah.
So it's about a Filipino woman after World War II, where she had married an American, I believe.
Oh, I disagree about it being an American, but she'd married a soldier.
Yes, a soldier. I guess I assumed it was an American, which I probably shouldn't have.
That's okay.
She's Catholic.
Yes.
And her family was against the marriage.
Yes.
So her husband had command of the destroyer, the Kusunoki.
Mm-hmm.
That was an actual ship because it was handed over to the British.
But it was a Japanese destroyer.
Yeah. So she comes back to the Philippines because her husband is dead.
Yes.
The shipwreck is out in the harbor. And then it's her reintegrating into the Filipino culture.
Right.
An old flame shows up and in kind of a grand gesture gives her a pistol to defend herself because he knows that the family was against the relationship. She's dismissive of it.
Yeah, she's dismissive of his fear that her brothers would be coming to actually, I don't know, perform whatever the Filipino version of an honor killing is.
Yeah. And then that's kind of where it ends with her planning the next day. She's going to go out and charter like a tour of the wreck.
Right. So she can go and visit the ship that her husband used to command. That's a pretty good synopsis of it. There are several details I think are interesting. She is looking for a way to kind of enter her life as a widow and mentally adjust to being alone, which is why she comes back to the Philippines via a boat rather than flying, which she says she's able to do. So apparently her husband has left her with sufficient inheritance or sufficient assets that she is not destitute.
Yeah.
So this returning to the Philippines seems very much to be a free choice she's making. She's not constrained to go back home. She wants to go back home.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I'm kind of leaning towards that this might be a wolf story, and I guess I could kind of point out a few things.
Yeah, let's talk about those details.
Yeah, there's a, they're singing a song.
Yeah.
I looked it up. I can't find the exact lyrics that are listed here in the story.
Right.
that seems fairly common. So these are not necessarily marching songs, but kind of fraternal songs.
Right. Soldier songs.
Yeah. And yeah. those are known for being, they have a lot of improv and people will make up new stanzas and then those right. get passed around and then unpopular stanzas drop out. They're very mimetic, I guess mm-hmm. would be.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
But part of the problem is the, it's like, but I'll do a hitch in, which is part of the song. Right. Her mind canceled the word for I'll pull another year.
In Zamboanga?
Yeah. I don't
Well, the rhyming word would have been hell, well, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I couldn't find the exact word, so I'm assuming that you are correct and it's hell, but I'm not entirely sure.
So what about it, the inclusion of the song makes you think of Wolf?
A lot of times he will import pop culture details from earlier time periods and his characters will either reference them or jokes will center around them. And so it's something that he does. They have like bodies of knowledge where they inhabit time.
I was going to go with a much more obvious. It feels like it could be a wolf story because it's starts on a boat and talks about very mild technical, but using port and starboard,
mm-hmm.
Nautical terminology. And that feels Wolfian, obviously not exclusively Wolfian. Your detail is much more characteristic of Wolf and not a lot of other authors or not a lot of easy overlap. But I was just going with, hey, they're on a boat.
Yeah, I don't even have a running list for the number of times that a wolf character will get on a boat and then we get like a chapter or two about some technical details.
Well, so this is really what Ursula Le Guin was talking about when she said Wolf is our Melville. Because not only did Melville settle out of stories on boats, which he certainly did, but he loved to have a story just going on at a good clip. You've got interesting things happen. Oh, wait, we're going to stop for a brief dissertation on why white is the most dangerous and frightening color, or this is how you cut up a sperm whale when you capture it,
mm-hmm.
or something.
There are parts in here that I'm not going to say that this is necessarily the experience of somebody who's been in battle, but there are details in there, like it's calling out the dive bombers. There's kind of details about, oh yeah, the ship was out in the harbor and, it does seem like this was written by somebody who, if they weren't in a war, they at least knew somebody who, this could be like an uncle or a great uncle that was talking about their experiences in the war and could have taken that. So like a war setting is, that's kind of a common mm-hmm. theme in Wolf. And then there's like
yes.
the weird alienation aspect where we have a character, this Philippine woman she's left her homeland, gone somewhere else, married an outsider, what would be considered an outsider.
Yeah, alien is the word that she uses in the opening, that alien country. I just assumed that her husband was Japanese. I had two reasons three. So there were two details that speak to Japan, and obviously Japan and the Philippines have had contact. So neither of those two details mean that her husband was Japanese, but the ship, the destroyer that was sunk was Japanese. Yes, it was later surrendered to the British, mm-hmm. but it had been commanded. And my imagining was that, you know, because it was not sunk in the Philippines, it was decommissioned. And so that Wolf rewrote it as having been sunk there and would have been under a Japanese commander at that time. And so that's what made sense to me, that he was Japanese. The pistol that her former flame brings to her was a Japanese pistol. And again, that's not a specific connection to her husband, but it just says Japan.
Yeah.
But then her family's hostility seemed much more reasonable if she were marrying one of the enemy that had, you know, my sense and my historical understanding could be somewhat limited here is that the Philippine view of the Americans, while complicated and sometimes negative, is not nearly as negative as the Philippine view of the Japanese. And so her family's hostility to her marriage made more sense to me if she had married a Japanese man.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Side note, if you're collecting for every U.S. mint that minted a coin, don't forget about the mint at Manila.
Well, what an interesting side note for anyone who is into coin collecting themselves or just wants to get into it, because Wolf was a bit of a...
Yeah, I guess so.
Coin collector.
So one thing in here, which I'm going to bring up, and it doesn't necessarily disagree with what you're saying, but it's thinking of how her husband would have said it in his precise nautical English.
Oh, yeah, that's a really obvious detail against my
But at the
point.
Same time, if my understanding is the Japanese officers, they were, like, English wasn't an unknown, like, okay. Most of these people would have been fairly well educated. Mm-hmm. He could have been using English.
Yeah, and I don't know either, but that's okay.
The fact that she's Catholic doesn't, there's hints of Catholicism in here, but I don't feel like there's any, I don't feel like anything necessarily turns on Catholic doctrine.
No, there's just the reference to Spanish Catholic culture and a long mourning period.
Yeah. And then there's another part, this could be overreading on my part, but Wolf often used blue and green and comparisons between blue and green. And we do, there are a few sections in here where talks about the blue-green of the water, or
right.
That, you know, there's the blue contrasted against something else that's green. That may not be, this may, I may be like straining at gnats here to kind of be like, oh yeah, it's like.
You wouldn't be the first Wolf reader to do so.
Yeah. So like, I'm very hesitant there. There's the, the husband, we don't get the husband in here.
No.
But we get the interpretation of the husband through his friend.
Yes.
So, and then the awkwardness of his friend interacting with his wife. Like, he's trying to comfort her, but he's doing it in terms that, because he's like talking about like, oh, he was a good sailor.
Right. His professional appreciation of her husband somehow is supposed to make her, I don't know, feel connected. And she realizes she was oblivious to his technical expertise and his professionalism.
Yeah. And that's a reoccurring Wolf theme where two characters will be talking to each other and they're having, I mean, I did reference Trip Trap, but it's like two characters talking.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
Way past each other, but they're in the same story. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could be.
He also does have characters. I think I can't think of who specifically, but he does have characters where spouses don't understand one another's lives, particularly their the professional life being somehow obscured.
Yeah.
Within the context of the relationship.
And then given Wolf's, I don't know if underdog, oftentimes he'll, the marginalized, he points that out. So then from the cradle, it's the Egyptian character who's the programmer and the AI who saves up, and he's only got like a few thousandths of a millisense.
Right.
With the Abos in the Beteta Cerberus.
Right.
We get their life at the margins of the larger colony life, or people that claim to be them or whatever.
Right. Their apparent presence at the margins.
Yeah. So having a story set in the Philippines, especially where the Philippines, where it's like you got the Spanish, then the US, then the Japanese. So in one sense, I think that the Philippines, their experience, Wolf would be somewhat drawn to that. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any other story where he sets a story in the Philippines.
No, I can't think of one either, but I have far from an exhaustive knowledge now. Check back when we're 1,000 episodes in. but yeah, what you're saying about people on the margins and that life on the margins, that is, I think, an overriding theme. And also, I think, explains a lot of the things that will raise repetitive and sometimes uninteresting questions, like why prostitutes? Mm-hmm. Well, who else could be more on the margins of society?
Yeah. And then there's the Eaters of the Dead
Yeah.
And we did. And he took the time to point out the dictator in Uganda who had killed all those people.
Yeah.
In the genocide that happened there. So he definitely was interested in those political issues.
Which brings us back to Catholicism. And maybe there's some Catholic doctrine there.
maybe.
I don't know.
About the downtrodden?
I don't know if there's anything explicit in Catholicism. No, okay. I'll be quiet now. I don't know. The more we talk about it, the more I'm coming down on the side of, well, this definitely, if it's not our Gene Wolfe, it's somebody who has similar perspectives and interests.
Yeah. And then we're left with a springboard out into a story because now I'm going to jump over to one that we haven't done yet, but I was thinking about the last Birdhead, the Vandermeer.
Oh, yes.
Anthology collection for charity. All the action in that one, like he spends time setting it up. Mm-hmm. And then you have the drunk sleeping at the bar. They're prepping for a joke where they're going to the bartender to tip them for making an imaginary drink. We don't get the actual action.
Right.
Here we're left with, she's going to go out and look at the destroyer, but there's this unresolved tension with her reintegrating back in with her family and her culture.
Yeah. And so we have an elusive retrospective on her life. Not a lot of details, but allusion to her previous life, the one where, well, two phases of it, where she was in the Philippines as a child, and then her marriage that we don't hear much about, just that it happened.
Yeah.
And then we have a prophetic vision, a bifurcating prophetic vision of what her life will be like in the Philippines. She's going to rent a house, and she's going to rent a boat, and she's mm-hmm. going to do these things. But also, at least her former lover is concerned about her family's violence. And so she may not be able to peacefully reintegrate into her culture. But we're in a transitional moment. We're in this space between her previous life and her future life, her potential future life.
Yeah. So it ends with her tossing the pistol in the sagging dresser. Once again, we get like this tropical, just all the humidity.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, the bottom of the drawer is sagging because it's constant.
It's warping. Yeah, warping. Yeah.
So she puts it in there and she's thankful for the machismo gesture. I'm not even sure if that's I think that's kind of that.
I think that's the flavor that's going on here. Yeah. This man who once loved her but who has since married someone else.
Yeah.
Wants to make sure she has a way to protect herself in case her brothers do get back to or get worked back up to being indignant about her leaving.
Yeah. And then she's kicks her shoes off and is thinking about the old ship down in the green water.
Yeah, green water.
I guess I already tipped my hand and the stuff I was pointing. I guess I should ask you, is there any details that you wanted to point out?
Oh, I think, yeah, you pretty much covered it. I went with the big things. It's, you know, nautically intelligent. It's related to war. I think that there are a number of physical details that sound like Wolfian descriptions. I liked that she made a neat black pattern at the railing and was almost smaller than life size.
Mm-hmm.
That just sounds like a wolf description to me. The captain was over polite and embarrassed and uncomfortable because he was not used to being polite and fundamentally did not like it. That just sounds like wolf to me.
Yeah.
She had stood once foolishly unafraid. That also sounds, again, like wolf. Then I think there was one other thing that seemed, oh yes, I am 47, though I have not been graced with children. She said it flatly, refusing any gallantry. I think that sentence that she said sounds like wolf, but the explanatory dialogue tag doesn't sound like wolf. So that was a moment of tension for me because that sounds like dialogue that he would write, but he often doesn't give you that descriptive tag that gives you context for it. You're supposed to put that in yourself. So yes, I think that about covers it for me.
Okay, since you brought up that last one where she hadn't been graced with children.
Yes.
Who do you think the baby is in the title?
I don't know.
Okay.
I wrestled over that.
I landed on it's probably her.
Yeah.
I kind of imaginated some...
some alternative explanations?
Yeah, maybe there was a child and it died and she's coming back to kind of get away from that. That would directly contradict what she said. However...
right. Maybe it's a future baby. 47's not past it. Well, for some people. My mother had her last at 41, and she's far from the oldest mother I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
But there's nothing in the story to indicate that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I landed on she was the baby in the sense like a honey or
right.
like an endearing term for a sweetheart.
Right. That is the only thing that made sense to me. I felt like the title was a bit of an awkward fit, but I figured I might have missed something.
I was wondering if I did.
Well, if you missed it, I also missed it. So
okay.
We're blind leading the blind right now.
Yeah. So I kind of already tipped my hand and on some of the stuff I wanted to bring up. I was leaning towards it's a wolf, early wolf story. I don't know, like if I don't feel any need to fight a battle over this and like the line must be drawn here.
Yeah. <over." laughs>
Like it's not like that, but I would not be surprised if with, you know, if somebody was able to do some more research and,
right.
you know, get into his papers or maybe the
and
Laurel
find
Review.
Record of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the Laurel Review has some correspondence.
Yeah.
So
I would be unsurprised to find it confirmed. And I also won't be indignant if you are certain it's not. But so, yeah, not a hill to die on. But I lean toward this is Wolf. There's nothing in the story that says this is definitely not Wolf.
Yeah,
so.
I have a similar feeling along that.
Okay.
I think it's fitting that somebody like Wolf, who was so obsessed with the unreliable narrator, like, it's like oh, there's this weird, maybe this is it's Wolf Apocrypha.
Yes, I think that could be an entire podcast on its own. You know, well, I don't know. Reddit's already done it with shitty Gene Wolf, but
yeah.
Apocryphal Wolf.
Yeah. Well, that's about all I have for this. It's a short, what is it? It's
3 pages and a little bit, and none of the 3 pages are very big.
Yeah.
It's a pretty small story.
3 pages and a paragraph on the last one.
Right. Well, this is where I feel like we did the right thing in going after Wolf's short fiction, because we don't have a 7-hour episode that needs to be cut up into multiple subparts, because this is containable.
Yeah. I was going to say we're reading it from a PDF that we requested through Interlibrary Loan, if you'd like to take a look at it. That's probably the best way. I don't see that it's on archive.org or posted anywhere. The Laurel Review from this time period is not on a lot of library shelves.
Right.
It hasn't been scanned anywhere online that at least of the time of this recording that I can find. So
yeah, it would be nice to own it, but definitely a hard one to find.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the unreliable narrators are Amanda Patchen and Brent Towle, and as Gene Wolfe said, you never learn to write a novel. You just learn how to write the novel that you're writing.